Yeah, I think those things build credibility, right? When there's good communication, when there's professionalism, you're building credibility to where they hopefully like and trust you, right? And so that's just part of the process there. And that does come down to things like, I mean, do the guys have uniforms on? Are the uniforms clean? Like all that, down to every detail there, we pay really close attention to that sort of stuff. And I think the high-level service companies across the board, those are things that they're all coaching their guys on and paying close attention to. And they stand out, right? They stand out from maybe the single operator who's not appearing as professional. So, but yeah, it makes a big difference. It really does.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us on another episode of The Pursuit of Purpose. Today, I am joined by John Battaglia. He is the owner of Addie's Home Inspections in Georgia, and he's also a code-certified master inspector, which maybe we can talk a little bit about. But today, he is on here to discuss a few different topics that I'm excited about, mindset shifts, building high-performing teams, and systems and processes. So before we get into those, John, go ahead and give us just a 60-second bio. Any other things that are important to know about John Battaglia?
Okay, yeah, sure. So I'm actually part of a really big family. One interesting thing, I guess, is I'm the oldest of 10 kids, which usually people raise some eyebrows at that and ask if we're Catholic, and no, we're not. But no, I have 7 brothers who are all here in the Atlanta area, and we're all contractors of various sorts. So kind of the background behind starting the inspection company was coming out of that. So we got plumbers and general contractors and guys that are electricians, all that in the family. So that's kind of the background there. And now I've got my 4 kids myself, 4 teenagers. So if you think about it, say a prayer for me. And but no, things are going good though.
And so your brothers or siblings were your first clients, basically?
Yeah, in some ways. When I first started getting into it, I was, of course, begging them, like, hey, let me come inspect your house. I need practice and all that. So still trying to figure out what exactly the home inspection industry actually involved and how to do a good inspection and all that. They were definitely the guinea pigs along the way. But being in the construction side, we had a little bit of an idea, of course, and inspectors would show up at our projects and stuff. So, yeah.
That's awesome. What is the, I feel, just like context for the stuff that you're going to be talking about? I always think it's helpful to have just like a snapshot of your business. You are, I would say, a very well-established and successful home inspection company. You're not a one-man band. You've been doing this for quite a while. Just, I don't know, what metrics, you can decide what metrics are important for as far as the size, locations, inspectors, revenue, whatever is comfortable sharing.
Yeah, sure. So I started in 2014, one-man shop for the first 3 or 4 years. Got to work in 80-hour weeks and said it's time to hire some folks. So 2018, brought the first employee on, which is another inspector. Today, I've got 7 other full-time inspectors. We do about, we'll do probably about 3,000 jobs this year. And revenue, well, we can talk about this, I guess, when we get to growth mindset, but we're actually probably going to just about double our revenue year over year this year. So tremendous growth in the last couple months. And so we'll probably, we're on track to hit over $2 million this year in revenue. So
that's awesome. I think that mindset in general, I was talking to somebody else about the topic of privilege. And I think that the most valuable thing that you could be privileged with in life is the mindset that you end up with. That I think it's a combination of, lifestyle factors, your parents, your teachers, just everyone that's in your life that affects what you think of yourself and what you think you're capable of. But yeah, give me, what has been, I would say, either transformational in how you think about mindset, or maybe actual shifts that you've gone through, or that you look back and say, man, if this wouldn't have happened, I'd be a totally different person.
Sure. So going back to kind of when I started the company, like I didn't have a growth mindset at all. I had very much a technician mindset, right? Like I just want to be a really good whatever, and I want to be the best, and I just want to make sure I'm doing good work, and it was all about me, right? And so when I first started, my goal was just to figure out a way to pay the bills. Like that was, I didn't have this grand idea of I'm going to build a company and hire folks and all that. None of that was even on the horizon. And I really didn't know a whole lot about business. I knew about the trades, but I didn't know much about actually growth or building a business at all. So that's kind of where I started at. And along the way, I mean, I remember the first coach I ever hired or started talking with, he said, what's your goal? Where are you trying to get to? And I said, man, if I could just do 5 inspections a week, I think I'd have more money I even know what to do with, right? And and he just laughed at me. He's like, that's the silliest goal I've ever heard. Like, you don't even have to try to get there. Like, come on, what are you doing? So we've come a little ways since then, right? And so some of the shifts that took place over time were, one, beginning to really value time, right? Time is the non-renewable resource that we all have. And money comes and goes. You can find a bunch of different ways to make money, and you can find some ways to lose money. But you can always get money back, I think, if you just find the right way to do it. Time you don't get back, right? So when I began to work longer and longer hours, having 4 kids, my wife also, at the same time me starting the business, had gone back to medical school. And so we were having a lot on our plate, and time was a premium. And so I said, all right, I want to get time back. That's my goal now. And so in order to do that, I'm going to need to build a team. And it can't just be about me. It's got to be about investing in a team that can now begin to give me time back eventually at some point, right? And so that was kind of a big mindset shift for me right there. I assume if folks are in the service business world, at some point, they might have read some Michael Gerber. And so,
E-Myth.
Yep, the E-Myth book. And so in that, he talks about the technician versus the entrepreneur mindset, right? And so I was 100% technician. All I cared about was I want to be the best inspector. I didn't care about anything beyond that. And the idea that a lot of other people I talk to, they really struggle with, is no one can do it as good as me, right? And that's the myth. That is a myth. 100%. Doesn't matter what you do or how good you are, there are other people who can do it just as well as you can. And coming to that realization and recognizing, like, hey, at some point I've got to be willing to take that leap and begin to trust other people that I can train them and that they can do work and do great work and do it just as good as I can. And if I can get past that, then we can really start to build a team. And so early on, about 5 years ago, that was the first kind of big mental roadblock I had to overcome. So,
and so that would have been what, 2014 is when you started, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking just in my head, because we've got 3 kids, 4th one on the way. How old were your kids when in 2014? What was the youngest and oldest?
Oh boy, I'm trying. That's gonna be tricky.
Some hard math.
I've got 4
Just subtract 8
now,
years
so,
from each
yeah,
one.
Yeah, so they would have been 11, 9, 7, and 5.
Yeah. Okay. Because I was gonna say the thing that I think is, it's like the blessing of. Well, I guess this is my current view because I'm in it, but the blessing of the family and the kids is the constraint that it puts on you to basically solve a tough problem, you know? Because it's like, if I didn't have kids, I'd probably be totally fine with working 80 hours a week, because what else am I going to do? You know, like I got nothing else going on. That's but right. it's that constraint that forces you to think, all right, here's the problem that I have to solve, and now I'm going to work backwards from I need to be at my kids' game, or I want to coach and help, you know, coach their team or whatever it is. Want to go hiking this Friday. It's like, how am I going to solve that? And that gives way to, you know, stuff that you probably wouldn't have done without it. At least that's how I feel.
100%. I think, when you have kids and have a family, you are kind of in some ways, if like you want to prioritize them, right? I mean, some people may, I don't know, but I certainly do. And so it forces you to start exploring like what is healthy boundaries, healthy rhythms, right? When it comes to work. And yeah, if it's just you or maybe you and your significant other and you both work a lot, yeah, you can just crank out hours and hours and hours and everything can go fine. But yeah, you throw a couple kids in the mix and it's a game changer for sure.
Yeah. I think that, so you're saying that one of these mindset shifts was going from the technician to the entrepreneur. I feel like one thing, because I've read the E-Myth, and I feel like there's that, to now, anytime that I'm getting into an area where I could become a specialist, it's like, I like talk to myself, and it's like, congratulations, Chris, you're now the best programmer ever, and you're trapped. So now what are you going to do? It's like, what do you, like, is this the, like, you're now working 80 hours a week, you're doing the best inspections in the country, and like, you're stuck. You can't, unless you get out of it, you're like, you got a trophy that you can put on your wall, and it literally doesn't, it provides no value for you, you know?
And the more you talk to people who at least I consider to be smart business people, that's kind of the grid they use to evaluate new business opportunities or expansion opportunities, right? It's, all right, this is an opportunity, but is it something I'm going to be able to delegate or use other people to leverage their skills to go after, right?
Yeah.
It might be the best opportunity in the world, but if it requires all of your time individually, it might not be worthwhile.
And, yeah.
So that's kind of the grid that I use to evaluate opportunity now. It's and that's, I've got a couple of those mindset shifts that we talked about, and one of those has in particular to do with that. We'll get into that in a minute. But yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a book called Buy Back Your Time. Mm. Have you heard of this by Dan Martell?
I have not.
It's he probably published it within the last 3 months. It's probably something that is not. You probably have done a lot of what he talks about, but he just gives a very, I would say, a tactical approach to like, all right, if you're feeling stressed out, you probably need X. If you feel like you're bottlenecked or you're like can't grow, you probably need this. And so he's like laying down the feelings that you typically have when you're tight on time. And he's able, like, I feel like it articulates, it turns the feeling that you have into, oh, you probably need marketing, or you need just a personal assistant to manage your email and calendar, you know, or like it's all like mapped out. Is it 100% right all the time? No, but it's a fantastic like starting framework to be like, okay, what is my next move? Because ultimately, yeah, you do want to get back all of your time or as much of your time as possible. And one of the transformational things for me was instead of what I think most entrepreneurs do, they say, all right, who's the next person that we should hire for our business? Like what makes sense for the business? Like, oh, we need to bring a salesperson in so we can get revenue and then we can hire office people or whatever. And he says, forget all that. You need to map out where your time as the entrepreneur, where are you spending your time? And then group all those tasks together and say, I'm going to hire somebody to take this chunk of tasks off my plate because that buys back my time. And now I can go solve the next big problem. And so anyways, I don't know if that type of thinking is something that you have done or can expand on, but that's just within the last 2 months, I've been like, oh man, it's just transformational to think about it from the perspective of, if I just keep buying back my time, I will naturally fall into solving more complicated problems because that's what I do, you know?
Right.
But if I don't have time to do that, then either I suffer, my family suffers, or the business suffers, you know?
Yeah, you're stuck in the weeds, right? And that's nothing great happens when you're stuck in the weeds. So that book sounds good. I'll check it out. But that actually, the most recent hire I made just about 3 weeks ago now was that very thing. And I begun a process and a habit of tracking my time. Not every single day, but usually 1 week out of the month, I'll try to get pretty specific with maybe hour by hour basis throughout the day for the whole week. Where is my time going? Keep a log of that. Break it down to the tasks like you're saying, and then say, all right, categorize this into this, lump into this maybe category. Who could I hire that could just take this whole category off my plate? And if I can
And who did you say you just hired?
Yeah, so I hired basically like a marketing assistant. I have a full-time growth rep, but I was still getting pulled into a lot of growth and marketing activities. And I've got like an office manager, I got office staff, but they don't specialize in the marketing and the growth side as much. And so I needed somebody who could just take a whole bunch of those little marketing tasks off my plate. And so we made a hire to do that, and it's been great. There's just, even this past week, we were going to events and I wasn't having to worry about the events. I wasn't having to schedule the events. I wasn't running around trying to pick up food for the events. None of that, right?
That's awesome.
I showed up, gave them a little presentation and left, and it was done. And I was like,
yes,
out of time. I just got back from that.
All
that other stuff was a game changer, right?
Yeah.
So it was awesome.
So that's huge. And I feel like the other big thing is, he has this ladder in the book, and it goes pretty far where you like apply it to your entire life. And so at a certain point, like this guy who's very successful has had a couple software company exits and whatnot. And he's like, he's got a house manager that literally just takes care of all the details of his house, you know, which is like, okay, that's another level to get to. But it's interesting to, like, in micro ways, think of, okay, what are like food prep or purchasing groceries or things where it's like, I had talked to Natalie about this. Like, we feel guilty being like, can we justify paying somebody to do this? Or like, how stuck up are we? And that's just like head trash, because it's like, but no, I'm paying someone to do this so that I can spend time with my kids or take my, you know, because I only have so many hours in the day. And is it worth your time to go do this task that you could pay somebody, you know, $20 an hour for, or whatever it is? And that the amount that you're willing to pay for a particular task changes as your income and earning potential changes as well. But anyways, I just thought the idea of like, there's so many things that we do, and it's almost like subconscious. We're just like, yeah, we just have to do this. This is just part of living. And he really like made me start thinking about a lot of stuff. I'm like, oh man. And obviously I'm not going to take action on all of them, but it did open my eyes to like, oh, that's interesting. I should look at that. I've never even looked to see if someone can do, you know, laundry, but that sounds kind of interesting. I wonder if there's a business for that, you know?
Right. So just, kind of going on that for a minute, growing up, as I mentioned, as a big family, right? And we were living up on a farm in the mountains, dirt poor, like 10 kids, right? And they, so just dirt poor. And so like my parents, they never paid anybody to do anything for them as long as I could remember growing up. It didn't matter what it was, right? Like the thought of hiring a contractor or someone to come in and do something at the house, or even someone to come in and do something on the farm for us, like that would have never, ever happened, right? Because it was all about saving every penny you could, right? And so going from that mindset growing up now to saying, wait a minute, no, money's not my most valuable resource. Time is.
Yes.
That's a big mindset shift, right? And so even like you were alluding to, you're like, man, I feel stuck up if I do this. And that's head trash, exactly like you said. Like, time is most valuable thing, hands down. So anything you can leverage out, like, it just makes sense. Why wouldn't you do that? And as you increase your income, you can afford to do that more and more as well.
And someone might listen to this and be like, you're just trying to make yourself feel better and not feel stuck up. But what he says is, you have to also remember that you're providing a livelihood for somebody else to do that thing. And so it's like, if you have been given the gifts to provide some service that it pays X, and then you have a margin in there of like allowing, maybe it's a younger person or someone that started a business that does this really niche thing. Like, someone else probably loves doing that, or they love checking off tasks or completing checklists or whatever. It's like, instead of thinking about it from the perspective of me, it's like, how could I, you know, just be a more positive influence in my community by trying to find ways to delegate. And again, this is turning into like life, but it comes back to the business too. It's like, in one way, business and life are not that different at all. It's like, do you answer phones in your business? Like, no, of course not. Like, that's something that, so why are you treating phone answering different than mowing your lawn or whatever it is? Because there are certain things that Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so anyways, that's the, yeah. I think it's just a really, I think that I'm glad you brought that up because that is a huge mindset shift of feeling like you're feeling guilty or like trapped because you feel obligated to do this thing. And you might feel obligated because that's what you're quote supposed to do or because you're really good at it. Either one is dangerous.
Right. Another grid I think you can use to just evaluate whether it's still something you should be doing or not, whether you should maybe outsource it, is does it give you energy or does it drain you, right? Like there might be some things, like for instance, my yard work. Like I could afford to pay someone to come in and do my yard work, but I don't for two reasons. One, I have teenage boys, so I want them doing some of it, right? So I kind of leverage it out to them a little bit, but I also enjoy it. Like it's calm, it's relaxing, it's not in front of a screen or in front of my phone. Like, so I just out there and work in the garden and the backyard sometimes, even though I could pay someone else to do that, it helps re-energize me. Right. So 100%. I think that's another thing. That's another grid maybe to use when you're evaluating what to outsource. So
that's awesome. So what, you mentioned another mindset shift. What was any other key ones that were impactful in growing your business?
Yeah, I've got a couple. So, one was, I think I was in a coaching group one time and the leader just told me, he said, hey, yes, you're in the inspection industry, but 80% of your business has nothing to do with inspections. And that's true really for any service or business at all, right? It doesn't matter if you're a plumber, HVAC, doesn't matter. We think like it's all about the service that we're providing and it's not. It's about service, not the specific
in general.
And so that really was a game changer for me because once I started going down that path, I began to see how true that was. When we talk with clients and agents, we work with real estate agents a lot in our industry. So doing home inspections, usually they're the ones referring the work to us. And so those relationships are really important. But we keep finding consistently now the last several years in the conversations that we have, it's not that we have technically competent or even expert inspectors. That's not what stands out to them. That's not why they want to use us. It's communication, hands down. So when we started implementing, hey, every inspector is going to reach out to the client, person buying the house, and the agent who's involved in the deal, and they're going to just give them a call on their way to the inspection. And if they don't show up at the inspection, they're going to call them afterward. Hey, I'm wrapping up. Here's just a couple of highlights. Yada. Just simple stuff, right? When we made that a process and just a really big priority and we kept just hitting on it with the inspectors, the feedback we got was amazing. They said, hey.
Just from a call on the way and call when I'm done.
Yeah, that's all it was. Yeah. A phone call before and a phone call after. That's all it was. And they said, we had agents right and left saying, we switched over to your company. We quit using our old inspector and started using y'all just because of that, because your communication was excellent. And you just let me know, hey, I'm there. I'm starting. Hey, I'm done.
Here's
a few things that we want to report. That's all it was, right? And so it just showed me it's not about the specifics of the service you perform.
Yeah.
It's not about inspections for us. It's just about running a high quality service business, and that's communication, right? It's professionalism. It's those sorts of things that apply to any service business. And so we really doubled down on those. I bought all the inspectors' vehicles, and we branded the vehicles, and we wrapped them so that when people pull up to the house, they're not wondering, oh, there's a strange car here. Is this my inspector or is it not my inspector, right? Just little things like that where we're up in the game on the professionalism side, and it doesn't have anything to do with being a good inspector, right? But those are the things that we found the clients and the agents absolutely love and makes them huge fans. So,
yeah, I think that to what that reminds me of is like I'm trying to like, you know, and there's so many areas in life. I'm going to use a restaurant as an example. It's like if you go to a restaurant, you kind of walk in, the environment is going to kind of set your, it's going to like set your focus in a particular area, if that makes sense. And what I mean by that is like, if I walk into a really nice restaurant and the hostess is like, you know, super professional waiting there. They're like, there's not like nobody at the counter, you know, and I go sit down and there's napkins, like the cloth napkins on the table. And they're just, people are like, it's a higher class thing. I know that this is a nice restaurant, even if I haven't looked at the menu just because of a couple details, you know, but then it's like something can happen where it's like, maybe there's like a hair in your water, or like the thing, the dish is dirty, or there's a fingerprint on, you know, stuff where you're like, this is like all of a sudden something is off. Right. And now you're like scrutinizing everything. Like, what am I missing? Something isn't quite right. And I feel like it's like that series of processes. Like you get a phone call, like, oh, this is subconsciously. I'm like, wow, he's letting me know. Okay, good. Shows up in a wrapped vehicle. Oh, interesting. Like, you know, professional company. And it's like, you keep checking those boxes and this is my story. I feel like I would probably scrutinize things less, because in my head, everything is still matching professional, 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 professional. But if you show up in just like a white pickup truck, unbranded, with just like a t-shirt and jean shorts, and you're like, hey, I'm here to do your inspection. Yep. All of a sudden I'm like, I'm going to take a second look at this inspection, and maybe, you know, it's like, and it might be that that guy was a better inspector, maybe, yeah. You know, but in my mind as the customer, I'm like, something doesn't seem quite right. And I just trust the whole scenario less. And then I feel like it potentially even makes the life of the business harder in that scenario, because now they're getting punched around and stuff because they just don't appear to be professional, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think those things build credibility, right? When there's good communication, when there's professionalism, you're building credibility to where they hopefully like and trust you, right?
Yep.
And so that's just part of the process there. And that does come down to things like, I mean, do the guys have uniforms on? Are the uniforms clean? Like all that, down to every detail there, we pay really close attention to that sort of stuff. And I think the high-level service companies across the board, those are things that they're all coaching their guys on and paying close attention to. And they stand out, right? They stand out from maybe the single operator who's not appearing as professional. So, but yeah, it makes a big difference. It really does. So
yeah. So the service, you're not in the service of home inspections. You're in the service business. That's correct. A good shift. Yep. What else? What other mindset shifts?
Yeah. So this one, I think this came from Richard Branson. So he has the whole Virgin Empire, the airlines and the music industry and all that. But he said, you can choose control or you can choose growth, but you can't choose both. You can choose control or you can choose growth, can't choose both. And that probably has had as big of an impact as any other single statement in shifting my mindset. As a type A personality, right? Someone who's involved in the details. It's what made me a good inspector, right? I love the details. I love the control of managing the little details. To let go of some of those and say, no, I'm going to choose growth over controlling every little detail. That was tough to do. But if I hadn't done that, we would never have gotten to where we are now. Ever. Mm. Like, it just wouldn't have happened. And so at the end of the day, you have to say, all right, zero mistakes is not a realistic expectation. There are going to be a few mistakes along the way, and that's all right. It's how we respond to the mistakes, not that we don't make mistakes, that really matters. And so as long as we respond to them rightly, some mistakes are okay. We're going to accept that, and we're going to prioritize growth, not perfection, right? And if you do that, I mean, that's what you have to do to grow. You think about any business that's scaled, they haven't done it perfectly, right? There's no big corporation that does everything 100% of the time exactly right. It's not going to happen. And you have a one-man shop who thinks he can do that, but in reality, even he can't or she can't do that, right?
Yep.
At the end of the day, like, we're still human. And as long as humans are involved, there's going to be some margin of error. And you've got to be okay with that and say, we're not going to obsess over the potential of making a mistake and let that hold us back. No, we're going to go ahead and we're going to move forward and we're going to keep growing and we're going to do that responsibly, right? But also we want to maintain quality, obviously, but we're going to be okay with some mistakes along the way in order to get to the next level.
So. Yeah. I also feel like when you say mistake, it's like there are certain mistakes that are easily reconciled, or just, you know, you got to go back and do the inspection again. All right. What'd that cost us? Yeah. Better. But it's like for the customer, it wasn't like, I'm sure there you could think of like some grave mistakes that you're still going to put a little more attention on. But in general, it's like you have to make sure that, yes, mistakes will happen. I also, part of me feels like as the owner of the business, you probably made all sorts of mistakes constantly, but we are quick to like write off or justify like, oh, that was a one-off scenario. I'm going to give myself a pass on that one. Or we just disregard that it even occurred. But when someone else does it, at least this is how I feel, I would be more likely to be like critical of what they did. But I forget that when I was in that situation, I made the same mistake probably 10 times more than they did, and no one said anything to me. But I'm just like, you know, I resolve it quickly with the customer and they're happy and move on, you know. But yeah, I feel like I haven't heard that dichotomy, which I like. Pick which one you want and acknowledge that if growth is priority, then like don't be a fool and try to control everything.
Right, because that's usually what holds people back from moving out of that technician mindset, right? If I have to hire other people and trust them to do the job, they might mess up or not do it as good, right? And so that's that control, wanting to just grab on and prioritizing that will never allow you to get to the next level. So you got to let it go. And it's okay if they don't do it perfect every single time, like, right? It's not going to be the end of the world. And you come up with metrics and you say, here's what we're shooting for and all that. Yeah, we have all that in place. We have QC in place for every inspector and every report they do and all that. But at the end of the day, that's not going to keep us from growing or hiring more people, right? You can make hiring mistakes. You've got people in the office making mistakes. I mean, it's whatever you're doing. Everybody makes mistakes, but it's not about the mistakes. It's about, are we growing overall? And are we, and are we creating? And when I say that, like, I'm not going to sacrifice our reputation.
Yeah.
It's not about the mistakes. It's about what you do when the mistakes happen, right? So that you can maintain a good reputation by just doing the right thing when you do make a mistake, and it's fine.
Yeah. So, would you say, or would you agree that, I kind of add one thing, that mistakes are going to happen. We accept that. But the key is, do we have other people solving mistakes? Can we increase the number of solvers that are resolving mistakes happening, or empower people to make corrections when mistakes occur? I feel like I don't know how you track that, and it's going to be different for everything, but I feel like if the owner is the one that's trying to resolve every issue that comes up, that's a problem. It's like, oh, we're fine with the mistakes. I just come in and fix everything that goes wrong. That's like another bottleneck. Whereas, as opposed to like someone, your inspector says, hey, I screwed up on this. But like, great, what do you think we should do about it? Okay, that's a great idea. Let me know if you need any help. You know, like, I think you should do that and report back to me how it goes, you know? Right. That type of mindset, I think, is key.
Yeah, that's one of the things that I've certainly been working on over the last year, is removing myself as the problem solver in the company, right? And so usually that is when an issue comes up, it's asking a question rather than offering a solution. That's the difference. Mm. And so, like you just did, you ask a question, say, all right, what do you think should happen there? And put it back on them, right? And if you can do that, then you train the whole company to be problem solvers, right? Every member, can be a problem.
How do you deal with the fact that you like solving problems and it makes you feel good?
It's tough. It's ego, right? That's what it is at the end of the day. It's ego. You got to get over your ego and empower your team. That's what it comes down to. So
that's awesome. Yeah. I feel like that, this is a very specific instance, but this happened yesterday. We were bringing on a new person that's going to be like a client for our review software. Her job is, basically like client relationship and just like updating people on, 'cause that's the biggest feedback that Natalie and I have gotten, is that people don't hear from us. So like the system's working and it's doing what we say it's going to do, but people literally get zero communication because it's just happening, right? And so we have someone whose job is going to be to update, you know, clients on the business. But the interesting thing was Natalie, who manages most of the team, she was stressing last night. She's like, I need to get Rome up to speed on how the software works and explain everything to her. And she, you know, we're also trying to plan a barbecue with some friends this weekend. And there's just life stuff. We have soccer games for our kids. And she's just like feeling so overwhelmed. And I was like, have you thought about asking Rod and Dee to just explain to Rome how everything works? And if they have questions, to let you know. And she literally was like, we've talked about this for like 3 hours since this conversation. And she was like, I can't believe that I was so trapped mentally on like, I have to do this to explain to a new hire, instead of just being like, hey, you guys have been here for a while. Tell her what she needs to know and let me know if you don't understand anything and I'll fill in the gaps. But the reality is they're probably going to do a better job than she would, because they're not going to be rushed. And they probably have figured out some stuff and nuanced things that even Natalie is kind of not aware of, because they're the ones in it. And I feel like that's another situation where Natalie wanted to control the situation, or even maybe she didn't even want to. It was just like a subconscious thing where she was like, new hire, got to train him. And I was like, well, what if you didn't? Then what happens? So, and it's like, everything works fine. Surprise, you know?
Yes.
So anyways, I think that's awesome.
I've got one last one here. So I know we might get into talking about books in just a second, but so this is a book that I read, but just transforming the mindset from how to who, right? So how is the name of the book. It's a pretty popular book.
Dan Sullivan, yeah.
Yeah. So that's, but when I read that and really started implementing that mindset, and so whenever I see anything needs to be done, which is like every minute of every day, right? As the owner of a business, right? You can just walk around and you're like, oh, I need to do that. We need to do that. And then I've got 10 million other new ideas every day because I'm an entrepreneur, right? And so the grid that I evaluate all that through is not how can I do it now, but who could do that? And if I don't have a who, I'm probably going to say now is not the best time to do it, before I add something else. And I'm going to wait till I have the who first before we implement it. And so that has been a big, big game changer. If you start to really, if you're at the place where you're having to really build that team out, I don't want to be the bottleneck, right? And I can kill the entire team by being the bottleneck, because everything's coming back to me. I'm the one mainly trying to figure out how it's going to happen. And
I feel like that's literally that book would have blown your parents' minds back in the day.
Yeah.
They looked at every problem. We're like, how are we going to solve it? We're going to do all of this.
Yeah.
Oh, we need to build a tractor from scratch. We're going to do this. Let's figure it out. Let's start an automotive company. You know, you need to build a house, need to do everything. I feel like, again, back to this privilege, like what is privilege? Like I acknowledge I have the biggest gift that I was given was my parents like believing in me, or me like having the self-worth of like I can achieve, or I'm worthy or capable of doing something. But they also, my entire life growing up, my mom and dad never paid an accountant to do their taxes, ever. And they had their own businesses, and I remember tax season was just like a 2 month long process in the Kiefer household. And there'd be receipts all over the dining room table for weeks and weeks. And they were stressed and just like, and then I literally thought that taxes cost like $100,000 to do. Cause why else would my parents go through this stress, you know? And then I find out that you pay like, you know, when it was simpler, now we have a little bit more complicated stuff, but when Natalie and I first got married, it was like $200-$300. And I was like, right, wait, that's right. It? And the first time we hired somebody, they immediately saved us like all these things we had missed, paid for themselves. I was like, oh my gosh. And so anyways, now my mom uses an accountant. I talked her into it, but it's crazy. And that's the same. I feel like that's exactly who, not how. Why are you trying to solve taxes on yourself? There's somebody that can do this.
Hands down. That's a great example. I love it.
So yeah, let's get into the some book recommendations. What do you got? Do you have three books for us?
Yeah, so definitely that Who Not How book was, if you haven't read that, man, that's one you need to go order on Amazon today. Another one, the next two I picked were not business related books. They're just great books, and they constantly are just kind of in the back of my mind is great reads. So one is a book called Breath by James Nestor. And that book, one of my inspectors actually recommended it to me, but it's just on the importance of breathing in our lives. And it also gives you some very practical techniques just to help reset throughout the day, and the mental and physical benefits of doing that. And just real, real practical stuff. But that's been a game changer, man. Just you got a lot going on when you're running a business sometimes, or you're working in a business and you get a little stressed out, and taking the time to reset and doing that through breathing exercises will really, it'll bring your blood pressure down, gets rid of stress, like all that stuff. So really, that was a game changer for me. So that was a great read.
And is Nestor, N-E-S-T-E-R?
O-R, I believe.
O-R, Nestor.
Yep. That's a great one. And then the last one I picked was it's a historical account. So if you're into history at all, you can see behind me here, I'm a big Teddy Roosevelt fan. So I've got some pictures of him on the wall behind me. But there's a book called River of Doubt. And so I love reading stories about guys or women that just did just crazy stuff that today, like, I just don't know if we'd be tough enough to do it today. And it just helps put in perspective what I think is like difficult. I'm like, yeah, you're being a baby about that. Like, So on this, Teddy Roosevelt did all sorts of crazy stuff, but he just on a whim kind of went down to the Amazon and found a river that no one had ever been down before, and got this whole crew of people and was like, hey, you want to go float down this river in the Amazon with me? And they're like, are we going to like actually live through this? And he's like, probably not, but it'll be fun. And so they just go do it, right? And there's a whole account of them like doing this for like a year, floating down this unexplored river in the Amazon. And so it's an interesting, just fascinating story. But you just, when you see the grit and the determination, just the toughness of the folks on this expedition, you're just like, it puts in perspective like what I think is hard on a daily basis. So I love stories like that. So
that's incredible. Yeah. I feel like, my grandpa is now 95, and, the other day I was visiting him and he just said, like, people have no idea how bad things can get and how hard life can get. And he was just telling me some stories, like his parents literally would just like, when he was like 9 or something, they like basically had him live with another like a farmer, a different family for the summer, just so that he could get fed. Cause the guy would like have him work in the farm, and that's how he would eat. And like, just for the summer, like, and it was like this blessing that it was summertime, so he could actually do productive work as like a 9 or 10 year old. I was just like, and that was normal. Like everybody did that. Cause it's like, you know, and that was, yeah, it's just insane. The level of comfort now, I'm sure. Yeah. And then to also think about, go do that same river journey now, which also would still probably be pretty treacherous, but you're going to have like scientifically designed coats and jackets and boats and everything that's like made of graphite and all this insane stuff. And they just had like probably a wooden oar, you know, and some trousers that they wore to church, you know. It's just like insane.
Yeah, it's just crazy. So yeah, I love reading history just because it does put things in perspective. And you said, previous generations went through stuff that we can't even imagine. And
totally.
And so that's good to be reminded of that. Makes us grateful for what we have today. So,
and what is last question, favorite movie? Do you have a favorite movie?
I don't watch a ton of movies, but let's see. I could say probably maybe Last of the Mohicans with Daniel Day-Lewis. That was one of my favorites. I like that. I remember watching that in high school and him run around the woods chasing deer and stuff. And I was like, man, that's awesome. So
I haven't watched that one. I feel like I'm just looking it up on IMDb. Like, that's
it's at least, well, I don't know, 25 years old now or something. I don't know. Feels like
it's, yeah, it came out in 1992.
Oh, it's older than that.
That's awesome. I'm gonna write that one down. I always look at IMDb ratings, and this one has it's a 7.7. So my cutoff is 7.3.
Okay.
And so if it's below a 7.3, you're gonna have to really convince me that it's worth my time, because statistically it's not. But this is 7.7, which is that's a solid movie.
Might just be nostalgia, but like I said, I grew up on a farm up in the mountains and I just spent a lot of time running around the woods, and so when that came out I was like, yes.
Yeah, so, that's awesome.
It was good.
So, well, sweet. If someone heard something interesting and wanted to connect and say thank you or hi or ask you a question, what's the best way for them to do that?
Let's see. They could find me on Facebook or I don't really have an Instagram. So yeah, they could find me on Facebook. Probably the easiest way. Message me on there. Just go to John. It's actually John Mark Battaglia on there, and find somebody that looks like an inspector down in Georgia, and that'll be me. So awesome. Yeah, they can find me on there. Probably the easiest way. Just shoot me a message. Love to hear from you.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this today, John. It was fun. And I'm hoping that everyone listening got some value out of these few mindset shifts. So appreciate you coming on and sharing that.
Yeah, it was great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for your attention and listening to this episode of The Pursuit of Purpose. Your feedback and comments mean the world to me. If you liked what you heard, please take a second, leave me a 5-star review on iTunes. If you've got suggestions for future episodes or just want to say hi, shoot me an email at chris@chriskiefer.com. Don't forget, I make it a point to include all the links to the books, movies, and resources mentioned on this episode in the show notes. You can see those directly below in the description or on my website, chriskiefer.com. Thanks so much, guys.